On Wednesday evening, we got into Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and just began the first three verses there. We're going to go back and review some of that, and then we'll be moving on into chapter 5. We've seen in the first four chapters that in some ways we've said Solomon sure is a cynical kind of fellow. And some of the things that he says, he kind of sounds down and depressed really about life and what it is and what it is not. Though there have been some points that he has made that were points of conclusion where he was looking above the sun. But most of the time, as he writes in the first few chapters, he's looking at life under the sun. And as we have said over and over, if we look at life simply as life under the sun, we'll be depressed too. Because we come to realize that really this life is a short period of time and then it's over. And then what? And Solomon seems to be understanding that more and more. When we get to chapter 5, there is a little bit of a shift of gears, so to speak. And his view turns very much to God and worship of God. And that's where we begin again today in chapter 5, verse 1. Guard your steps when you go to the house of God. Go near to listen rather than to offer the sacrifice of fools who do not know that they do wrong. Do not be quick with your mouth. Do not be hasty in your heart to utter anything before God. God is in heaven, and you are on earth. So let your words be few, and as a dream comes when there are many cares, so the speech of a fool when there are many words. We stop here for a moment. Let's review these verses a little bit. And some points that kind of stand out, some things that are important as we see those verses. I'd like to hear some of your comments on that as we review some of these things. What do you see when Solomon here is speaking here in these first few verses? What do you see? Right. Powerful point. You know, just back to this remember who you are kind of a thing. There's another hand here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. As God says, one of the prophets, God says, I don't want your sacrifices. That's right, because the sacrifices had come to mean nothing. You know, their heart wasn't what it needed to be. I think you're exactly right, Vince.
A lot of people go to God with complaints about their life, things not going right in their life. I think they're very self-centered.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We need to understand what God's will is for us instead of what we want out of God.
Yeah. Yeah, the importance of understanding who God is in comparison to who we are. And that's where we get that mixed up sometimes. Somehow kind of placing ourselves over God. It's never been that way. But we see always throughout Bible history, we see the problem when man starts thinking better of himself than of God. It never works well. Other thoughts? Frank? Yeah. Yeah. What do you suppose his point is with that? Better to listen than to speak. Well, yeah. Well, and in this case, when you're listening to God, yeah, I mean, it's like I'm getting the impression, to some degree, from Solomon here, is that sometimes man gets in the position of thinking he can tell God what to do or tell God what worship should be. And when we go to the house of God, we need to be listening to Him. Is the other side to that. You know, listen to what God has to say with that. I mean, without God, and here we're seeing this overall theme that under the sun, life as it is, without God is not much. I mean, there's just not much. Because it's just going to be here for a while, then that's going to be gone. But when we have life with God, and we're looking at life above the sun, and we're listening to Him, and we're worshiping Him as He would really want us to worship, well, life takes on a completely different view then, doesn't it? Okay. Other thoughts with any of that? I've got a couple more coming to my mind. So, if when we assemble together, when we enter the house of God, as this text would say, what do we need to do to get ready for that? I mean, to listen. Well, in view of listening, what do we need to do? How do we do that? Okay. Keep going with this. What are some practical applications we need to make with this? You know, I've said this a lot to young people, and young people are all in these classes. We're not the young group in here, I'm afraid. But I think there's applications still that can be made. You know, when you get up on Sunday morning and you're thrashing around through the house trying to find your clothes and your Bible and your workbook or whatever you need, it should be an indication to us already that our mind is not where it needs to be. That we've not made preparation for the Lord's day. And we tried telling our girls when they were coming up, and still, if I talk to them on Saturday night, they pretty well know that phone call is going to end with, remember what tomorrow is. Or, are you ready for the Lord's day? Because that preparation cannot start on Sunday morning. We're already behind. When we start trying to prepare for the Lord's day, on the Lord's day, we've missed something. And it's concerning to me, you know, everybody has off days, okay? Everybody has a day where you're just tired and you don't feel well, and we're not as chipper as we need to be or want to be. But when you see a pattern with some that way, I have concerns with that. There's something wrong. If it's not a health issue, then what is it? I mean, there's a spiritual issue. There should be some level of excitement for the Lord's day and our assemblies together, whether we are coming together to study or to worship God. There should be some excitement in that. And if we've prepared in such a way for that day, then that should even add to our excitement. It's not too hard to figure out who watched the late movie last night. I mean, you know, yeah, I've got a pretty good view from up here. You know? You're not fooling me. You know? Okay? Everybody dozes off from time to time. I've been there, all right. You know, I used to work the late shift. I didn't get off till midnight, you know, and if that was on a Saturday night, Sunday mornings were pretty tough, all right. I understand. Okay, we have those days. But if we, watched the late movie last night, or we were at the football game and didn't get home to 1 in the morning, and we were all wound up and we couldn't go to sleep, and while you had a rough night, boy, am I sorry for you. It has nothing to do with what you're doing last night. It's the problem is, where is our mind at? And what were we thinking last night? Tomorrow's the Lord's day. We should be making some preparation for that. And that even includes getting to bed at a reasonable time. And I'm afraid in so many cases, we've not taught our children that. By our example, sometimes we've not taught our children the importance of the Lord's day by teaching them such things as, you have your clothes picked out for tomorrow morning? Let me look at your lesson book. Have you got that all done? What questions do you have? You know, I mean, we teach our children and our grandchildren by doing those things. So, when we think about worship, it starts before we even come in the door and making preparation, you know, for the day.
Sure. To serve the Lord all the time.
There is a certain mindset among religious people that Sunday is a day that we have to act extra good. Have you ever heard such things as that? As though Sunday is the day that, you know, I mean, it's Sunday, so we have to be good today. Well, okay, Sunday's a good day to be good, but there's like 6 other days in the week, And there's not like a card given to us for a pass on Monday through Saturday, though we don't have to be good. You know, I mean, it's a special time when we assemble together. I think that's part of what Solomon is saying right here. But every day needs to be a day where we're thinking about the Lord. And then that transition to our time of worship sure seems a whole lot more natural to us at that point. What? Yes. Sure. And even as we are preparing for the Lord's day to come, you know, praying for that day, I mean, I don't think it should just be like a preacher thing. Maybe preachers pray about this more because I get nervous on the Lord's day. It's kind of like a heavy hitter day for me. All right. There's like a lot of deliverables that take place on Sundays, you know. And so there are certain prayers that seem to increase in my life, I will admit. You know, on Saturday night, you know, for concerning the Lord's day. You know, I mean, do y'all do that? It's not just a preacher thing, is it? It shouldn't really be. You know, because, I mean, the Lord's day is such an important day. We need to be thinking about that, praying for those types of things, even more so as that day approaches. It's interesting, in the Hebrew letter in chapter 10, you know, we talk about verse 25, not forsaking the assembly. Verse 24, I think, is actually the real point to consider one another and exhort one another. You know, in verse 25, so much more as you see the day approaching. I'm not exactly sure what the day approaching is. I mean, you can kind of make some different arguments on that. One of them would be the Lord's day. As you see the day of assembly, you know, drawing closer, certainly would be a point of emphasis, something to think about. It almost seems to me as that Solomon's trying to make the point that going to the house of God, as he says here, is something that could very easily be something that is just habit. We just go because, well, of course, that's what we do. You know, on Sunday we get up and we go. And that there has to be something much more to it than that. It's not just a matter of habit that you go. There's purpose, that there needs to be purpose in our reason for going. And then during our time together in worship, you know, there's this idea, it seems to me, of listening. And this kind of stood out to me as well. You know, do not, there's two points. One is do not be hasty with your mouth as in making vows. You know, if you are going to make promises to God, you know, which I suppose most have done that at some point, think about what you're saying. I mean, if we make promises to one another, that's important. I got in the habit a long time ago when our girls were small. I tried not to say, I promise I'll do this with you, because they would hold me to those promises. Or if I didn't do that as I said, it was kind of like, they could really work on me with that. You promised, you know. And if you promise, you need to uphold your word. I mean, always uphold your word. And so I kind of got with the girls. I'd say, listen, we will do this if time allows, or we will do this if I can do this. So we'll do it. So I got a little more careful with my promises. There's maybe some application that can be made with that too. That's what Solomon is talking about here. Don't be quick. Some verses might say, don't be rash with your mouth. Do not be hasty with your heart to utter anything before God. You know, here again, we're in this mindset of assembling in worship to God and the sanctity of that. You know, and don't make quick promises to God. Well, I'll be faithful. I'll do what's right, you know, from here on out. Well, sure, that's all what we should be doing, yes. But if we're going to make a promise to God, we better mean it. We better be serious about such a thing if we're going to be doing that. God is in heaven, you are on earth, so let your words be few. Well, yes, in the place, in the presence of God, I don't think we should have hard... What words do we have to offer God? Except praise and adoration and honor and glory. That's as far as our words before God can go. We're in the position of listening to Him. And I think that's part of His point right there. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Not what we think.
That, beautiful point. That's right. Yeah, it's a focus and it's a view toward God, not toward self. And it's true. I mean, we should be edified in that process, indeed. But it's with a view toward God. It changes the way we think if we can turn that around that way. Right. Good thoughts. Let's look a little bit further. Verses 4 and 5. When you make a vow to God, do not delay in fulfilling it. He has no pleasure in fools. Fulfill your vow. It is better not to vow than to make a vow and not fulfill it. Do not let your mouth lead you into sin, and do not protest to the temple messenger, "My vow was a mistake." Why should God be angry at what you say and destroy the work of your hands? Much dreaming and many words are meaningless. Therefore, stand in awe of God. Oh, that's powerful to me. You know, we're back here to this mindset of trying to have our mind where it needs to be and well, how we should act and what we should say even in our worship to God. Why do you suppose that Solomon is spending so much time and making such an emphasis about a vow to God, making a vow to God? And the dangers even of that. Why do you suppose he's spending so much time on that? What do you think? Wes?
It's not only God that you should, if you make a promise like you said to your daughter or to anyone in your business associates or anything else, it's a matter of integrity. It's part of your character that you do what you say you're going to do. And I say, okay, I'm going to be there at this such and such a time. You need to be there at that time. Because otherwise, you're appearing to be thinking that you're more important than they are because they have to wait on you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just, you know, an example.
Yeah. Sure. Good point. Bring.
Two things. I think those seven verses remind me of back to 20. You know, keep silent before you. Wait on what he has to say. Not always pushing the hands. But secondly, if we're supposed to be as God,
And so should God be able to depend on what we say. Absolutely. So, and sometimes we just need to be quiet and listen. I like that point too.
I was reading just the other day in Proverbs, Solomon says, it says, when there are many words, transgression is unavoidable. I think sometimes we talk too much.
Yeah.
You know, words have meaning. Before God, they have great meaning.
Sure.
So, sure.
Yeah, we can be so quick even trying to say the right things that we can say too many things. We can say things we can't fulfill. We can say things that we aren't prepared or able to really fulfill. You know, whether that's physically or even spiritually, we can make promises that we are not prepared to fulfill. And we need to think about that. And that, in view, may be part of what Solomon is talking about here as far as making rash vows before God. Be careful what you promise. You know, be careful what you say. Other thoughts? Good. I love this. Good thoughts here. Go on.
I'm mindful when I read this of politicians that are making promises to votes. But I think to break it all down, the basic thought here is it's not a good idea to lie to God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Put it in brass tacks. Not a good idea to lie to God. You're right. Yeah, very, very true. Do not let your mouth lead you into sin. You know, is what he says in verse 6. And later he says, why should God be angry at what you say and destroy the work of your hands? I mean, we need to be careful what we say, and so not to have God or angry at us is what he's saying. Pretty powerful things. The conclusion of that section of text, really, you know, he kind of stands back and says, therefore, stand in awe of God. Well, just a powerful thought. I mean, here and again, the view is, you know, going to the house of worship is where the text began. And he has told us to, he's saying, you know, be careful, you know, to be prepared, to think about what you're doing. Think about what you're saying. Listen to God. Don't make rash vows. Don't say things that you're going to regret. Don't say things, make promises that you cannot fulfill. Again, listen to God. And then standing back and saying, and therefore stand in awe of God. Could it be that sometimes we get so caught up with the things that we have to say that we don't listen to God, and it minimizes our respect and awe of God? And we can get so caught up in ourselves that we don't listen to God. And if we don't listen to God, we can't hold him in awe because we don't know what he's saying. And it seems like that fits in the point with me. It meant something.
It meant something.
Mm-hmm.
And people would say, if he told you so and so, you can bet
on it. Mm-hmm. You knew it was true. Yeah. And our word should be that way, too. Our word has to be that way. Dave?
Jesus used the word hear many times. He said, my sheep hear my voice. And
mm-hmm.
He said, you to have an ear, let him hear.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people out there.
Yeah. Yeah, Jesus certainly emphasized the point about listening to what he was saying. Absolutely. Daryl?
What do you think God feels about the general population that uses his name and it has no meaning? You hear people so many times.
All the time.
I know. Or, oh my.
I know.
And it gives me shivers because.
No respect to God.
No respect.
And the whole idea of the text here is about respect to God. And you're right. I mean, that describes a great number of the population. No respect for God.
Well,
that's true, too. And part of the no respect comes from knowledge. Back to what he said. Listen. We won't know what God wants until we listen to him. Daryl. Absolutely. And, I mean, God has given his judgment on a number of things. We can speak about that judgment where he has spoken. And when he has not spoken, he may still make judgment. That's his prerogative. That's for him to do. But we better be careful about speaking about whether it's his judgment or not. We better listen. Good thoughts. Good thoughts. Let's look a little bit farther here. We go in the text, and let's see. Going on to verse 8, beginning. If you see the poor oppressed in a district, and justice and rights denied, do not be surprised at such things, for one official is eyed by a higher one, and over them both others still higher. The increase from the land is taken by all, and the king himself profits from the fields. Whoever loves money never has enough, or never has money enough, and whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income. This too is meaningless. Wisdom about riches. Some things to think about riches. The overall thought of Solomon is not that riches makes is not that riches is bad or wealth is bad, but there's some things that wealth can do to us that can be bad. Sometimes wealth is not used as it should be. That can be bad. The overall point is not that wealth is an issue, but if you have wealth, you better be careful with it. You better watch how that can affect you. Solomon, in a position, I kind of, you know, think of Solomon as having an eagle's position, where he's looking over his kingdom, as great as it was, and he can see all the different things that's going on. When it comes to wealth, no one knew any more wealth than what Solomon had. He could look out among the kingdom. Surely he could see others who had some wealth, but he could see those who were poor. And he could say then, those, if you see the poor and oppressed in a district, and justice and rights denied, sometimes that's still the case. Sometimes it's still the case where those who are the poorest are those who are not heard. Solomon talked about that a long time ago. Those may be the ones who are denied. Do not be surprised by such things. Part of the issue he identifies, for one official is eyed by a higher one, and over them both others are still higher. You know, kind of looking at some of the governmental type issues. Well, there may be some who are denied by a governmental issue and they think poorly of him. Well, there's somebody higher than him that looks down on him too. And there's two people above that one looking down on them. And so sometimes things in government, they do not always work right. Nothing new. We're concerned and we gripe about that sometimes now. It's nothing new. I mean, Solomon could see that. And here is a kingdom that was, you know, one of the most powerful and one of the richest kingdoms that there ever was. And government did not always work well. And that's the king that's saying that. He's identifying that. I've struggled with this part a little bit. The increase from the land is taken by all. The king himself profits from the fields. What's the idea of that? The increase from the land is taken by all. And the king himself profits from the fields. What do you think?
It's an agrarian society. What they produce, the goods and services they produce, are from the field.
Mm-hmm.
Pays not only the farmer, mm-hmm. The farmer buys goods and services,
yeah.
And pays taxes, and it goes all the way up.
Everybody benefits somehow.
Everybody benefits from what is going on. That's their basic problem.
And it's basically true today. I mean, if a country as a whole prospers when the economy is better in this country, rich or poor all seem to benefit in some way from that. You know, there are times where we all have complaints about the government, and yet sometimes when there are some aspects of government that works well, all seem to benefit from that. All seem to suffer when some aspects of government do not work so well. You know, there's some pros and cons. And here's Solomon, who's the king, who is standing back, seemingly who can see that. And he's looking at those who have wealth, and he's looking at those who are poor, and it seems like he's saying that it seems like those who are the poorest are the ones who are being denied an ear from even those in government, is what he is saying. And then on the other side, he makes the point, you know, that when there is increase in the land, all have a part of that increase. You know, just as kind of perspective, perhaps, of some of those things. But he makes a point to talk about the ugliness of oppression. I mean, he could see that. In verse 10, you know, whoever loves money never has enough money. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income. This, too, is meaningless. Dissatisfaction with wealth? We talked about this some from an earlier chapter already, that it seems that sometimes those who have the greatest wealth are those who are the least happy because they're just consumed with finding more wealth and dealing with that. It's hard to find someone with wealth who is satisfied with where they are and really enjoying their wealth. There are exceptions, I know. There are exceptions to that. And I would trust that we could be exceptions, you know, as far as just a mindset from a Christian with whatever we have to find some satisfaction in that.
We have to be exceptions.
Sure. To be the example. From the standpoint, to be the people of God, we have to be the exceptions to that and to be examples to others.
And the love of money is the root of all.
Absolutely.
And so if you fall into this trap of wanting more and more and more.
That's right.
Then you have fallen into that trap of ignoring God.
Yeah.
After earthly.
Sure. Your thoughts? It's about the attitude toward money. That really seems to be the point that Solomon is trying to drive home with this. It's that attitude more than what the amount may be. Because in the scheme of what is wealth and what is not, someone could be on the lower side of the wealth scale and still have the wrong attitude about money. You know, where there's someone on the high end of the wealth scale that has the right attitude about money. Attitude seems to be the issue. Going on to verse 11. As goods increase, so do those who consume them. And what benefit are they to the owner except to feast his eyes upon them? The sleep of a laborer is sweet, whether he eats little or much, but the abundance of a rich man permits him no sleep. All right, so what's that about? What's the idea here? Becomes all consuming. Why does the laborer sleep so well?
Because he's tired.
You know, that's one reason, because he's tired. What else?
The rich man overeats. And we've all experienced that, and eat too much too late.
Can't sleep. Isn't that horrible? What I mean, we can be blessed to have so much sometimes to eat, and we go to bed and we can't sleep because we ate too much. Isn't that crazy? You know? I mean, how a blessing can turn out to be a curse and keep you awake half the night because you're too full. You know, whenever I do that, I try my very best to think about those who don't have enough to eat just to punish myself a little bit. Isn't that crazy? You know? Interesting cycle, though, as you see this and you think about these things. You know, as goods increase, so do those who consume them. I've struggled with that just a little bit. Like, you know, what does that mean? As goods increase, so do those who consume them. What?
More children.
Well, it could be more children, or yeah, maybe.
And we're consuming.
Sure.
Whether it's the farmer or the rich ruler, we're still depending on God to provide, and sometimes we think we did it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that gives us a bit of a problem.
Yeah.
That's
looking inside.
And we forget that God still made the increase. He did.
Yeah, that's right.
Sure.
No, look what we did. we've lost the point when we do that. You're right. Some have suggested on this passage. I thought this was kind of interesting. As goods increase, so do those who consume them. You know, if you have wealth, it seems as though there would be more that's coming to say, "Can I help you with any of that?" You know, there's more that are there. You know, wanting something from you, whether that's children, or even those outside who are just looking for help, you know.
Think about something like the Biltmore Estate, which all of us are familiar with here. You know, George Vanderbilt had a lot of wealth, and he began to build this house. He wanted to build this chateau in the mountains of North Carolina, and the bigger it got, the
Yeah.
And then, after, my understanding is, if I remember correctly, that after the estate was basically finished, he lived 5 years and died after that.
Mm-hmm.
And was very, very busy, you know, mm-hmm. all of that time. So, and I'm not saying any of that is wrong.
Right.
I mean, the Biltmore estate has been very...
But it puts some things in perspective, though. It
does.
That's right.
Imagine what it takes to maintain that.
Yeah. Where does it end?
Yeah.
Right?
My understanding is that he had appendicitis, and he didn't trust the doctors in Asheville.
Mm-hmm.
And he died on his way to New York or
New
Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
First of his
kid. Yeah. About that. Oh. Right. 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 So as goods increase, so do those who consume them. Makes on a little more meaning when you think of it in light and in view of some of that. Our time here is just about gone. I think we're going to stop right there. We'll try to take up on there Wednesday night. As we get into chapter 6, kind of the same theme as we get on into the next chapter. It's going to run us through the next chapter. And some of the same points are kind of made over and over. Sort of expect chapter 6 will go a little quicker because it's going to be some of the same points over and over. We won't spend as much time on some of that. So make sure you read through the rest of chapter 5 and chapter 6 and be prepared through there. And Lord willing, we'll work on that Wednesday night. Thank you for your good comments.